Stepping out beyond boundaries takes courage and the ability to dream. We are excited to share our new audio podcast called Cut to the Chase. The structure of this podcast embodies open dialogue with friends, family, and professional colleagues, talking about things that impact our ability to thrive. We hope that you will join our unscripted, unbridled podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Gregory Proctor, and welcome to another episode of Cut to the Chase. This is one of our bonus episodes. And to my listeners and to my audience, I will have to say that, yes, this is the first Cut to the Chase episode that has been recorded probably in about 2 years. It's for a good cause. I've got a phenomenal featured guest on today's program. We're going to be talking about some great things, which if you guys have been following me out there on LinkedIn, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, so forth and so on, you know I'm heavily involved with the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. So this is going to dovetail right into that. Today's episode is called Becoming a Visionary, Making a Difference to Cancel Blood Cancer. And I'm going to open up with a quote. The best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others. Now, this individual that I'm about to introduce has become a good friend of mine. We're actually working on something pretty phenomenal, which we're going to talk about. And today, our featured guest, he's a son, he's a brother, he's a husband, he's a father, he's a friend, he's an educator. He lives here in this greater San Antonio area, loves music and art, was born by way of Toronto, Canada, graduated from Baylor University in 2021 with a major in biology and anthropology, and continues to earn his master's in the physical assistance from the University of Texas Medical Branch here in Galveston, Texas. He's also focused in pain management since 2018. However, he's also in the emergency medicine, general surgery, family medicine, urgent care medicine, wounded care, wellness, and men's health. He enjoys his time with his three lovely children outdoors, hiking, biking, and attending concerts and playing sports with them, including his lovely wife. And when he's not in the clinic, he's in the woodworking shop, crafting up some new furniture or whatever he does in the woodworking shop. And so I would like to welcome our featured guest, Mr. Al Murji. How are you doing, sir?
I'm great, Gregory. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it. It's such an honor to be in this realm here with you today. And like you said, discussing a great endeavor that we're both involved in. So I'm excited. I'm excited to be here.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Like I said, it's something that's very near and dear to me. You know, folks have followed me for the past 2 years through my cancer journey. It has been something that at this point in my life has been very uplifting and therapeutic. And later on, we'll talk a little bit about that. I don't want to disclose too much, but certainly, you know, I'm happy to have you on the program. And let's dive in a little bit here because, you know, our topic today we're talking about is becoming a visionary, making a difference to cancel blood cancer. And so, Al, I'm just going to start out to kind of help people ground what we're talking about here. What is a visionary?
You know, when I got asked to become a visionary this year, you know, I thought about the same question. What is a visionary? And I've had some time to think about that as we were setting up for the campaign this year. And now that we've been in the campaign for a few weeks. And I truly believe a visionary is someone who's willing to take that next step.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's somebody who's willing to go that extra mile, to reach out. You know, somebody dear to me too, she calls them touch points, mm-hmm. right? We're willing to go out and meet with others, to learn about other stories, you know, and to see how can we as an individual help the whole, you know, mm-hmm. how can we help the greater good, you know, and that's where I feel like I can be helpful as a visionary. You know, how can we make a difference in other people's lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
to me, that's what a visionary is. Somebody who can see that, somebody who can go beyond their own bubble.
Right.
You know?
Right, right. Yeah, and just to kind of, you know, piggyback off of what you stated there is, you know, Visionary of the Year, which was formerly known as Man and Woman of the Year, is a 10-week philanthropic competition for leaders in the local communities across the U.S. And basically, the candidates and their team members help raise funds for the Leukemia Lymphoma Society in honor of blood cancer survivors and honored heroes just like yours truly.
That's right.
So, you know, with this whole coveted title, Visionary of the Year, which is something that, you know, I think a lot of people really get their kind of competition spirits really amped up, you know, when they go, all right, you know, I'm going for the title. You know, the team who raises the most money within this 10 weeks has an opportunity to basically be awarded, you know, a Visionary of the Year, basically across the entire nation. I mean, that's quite impressive, you know, that's quite impressive. And I think, you know, when we start thinking about Visionary of the Year, you know, there's particular pillars and focus key areas that Visionaries of the Year try to focus in on. And out of those four, you know, you've got research, patient education, support and advocacy. And then the one that they always leave off is legislation. You know, how important is it to ensure that we can be right there, you know, on the doorsteps of trying to make policy changes, which are really, really important. And so which pillar did you choose there, Al?
I chose support.
Chose support. Okay.
Yeah. Support to me was very important. I've seen firsthand how the LLS Society has helped patients, families. You know, you get this devastating news, you know, you're in shock that you have this cancer now. And then comes the reality of it. You know, well, I have to get treatment. How do I go about this? And treatment, unfortunately, as you know, and unfortunately, as many know that have cancer, is how do I pay for this? You know, or I have to go out of town to this place to get treatment. You know, I have to be away from my family. How do I afford to live in another state, in another city for weeks? And so I've seen firsthand how the LLS has helped support financially patients with copay assistance, with housing, with whatever they need to sort of help them along the way so that they can get the treatment that they need.
Yeah. You're definitely spot on because, you know, just here in the South Central Texas regional area, they've served over 1,800 households, you know, this past year, you know, with the grand distribution of grants and fundings exceeding approximately $8 million, which went out to approximately 767 patients that receive what you've talked about, that copay assistance, including me. I was a recipient as well because, you know, in the early stages of just trying to figure out how are you going to pay for all this and what insurance is going to pay for, what they're not going to pay for. It just becomes very overwhelming. It becomes a very darkening circumstance for anyone. You know, just hearing the words cancer alone is numbing. You pretty much block everything else out and people begin to just say, well, you know, for me, I felt like it was out of mind, out of body experience. And I think in most cases, people just feel like, you know, how could this happen to me? Why me? You start to have that kind of pity party to a certain extent. And it begins to really, you know, provide, like I said, this dark essence of cloud above you. And you just, you know, you're just trying to, you know, get out of it so you can see the light. I mean, it makes it very, very difficult when you've got financial and insurance and living and medical costs and all of these things.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the thing that people don't understand, Greg, is that life still goes on around you.
That's right.
Right. Your family life still goes on, you know, and you feel like you just want it to stop right there. But unfortunately that doesn't happen. Everything keeps moving. Bills keep coming in. You know, you have to keep paying for things. And your focus at this time, you know, you just got this cancer diagnosis, your focus should be on yourself, healing, worrying about, you know, making sure I'm eating right, I'm getting enough sleep. And the last thing you need is stress now about money, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So it's
that's right.
that support it can be so helpful, you know, to so many people. And so to me, that pillar really stands out as something that is so needed. And I'm hoping that we can continue growing that support.
So Al, help our listeners understand, why did you choose to pursue the Visionary of the Year opportunity?
So, you know, cancer has been a part of my life sort of from a very early start. You know, my mom had been diagnosed with cancer when I was about 15, 16 years old. She had developed a oral cancer. She had it operated on, went through a very extensive surgery and grafting and just a horrible surgery. And then after that, she underwent radiation and chemotherapy. And the effects of that were so, you know, the after effects, you know, from the radiation, you know, she had constant dry mouth, you know, she couldn't eat a lot of foods because of that, constantly having to drink water, you know, just drying up the skin, just so many other issues from that. And she fought that fight, you know, she fought that good fight for 10 years. And unfortunately she lost that battle. And then a lot of my friends that I'm very close to and dear to have been diagnosed with lymphoma and leukemia, and watching them go through that and supporting them and seeing that the help that they received. And so cancer has always been around me and a big part of me. And one of the things that really, really sort of brought that empathy to me is my mom had been, I'd say, let's say maybe 5-6 years in remission. And we were now living in Canada. We were living in San Antonio, and she started feeling like something wasn't right. And she felt like something wasn't right. And so we went to an oncologist here in San Antonio. And, you know, she was nervous. She was anxious because, you know, she just, you know, obviously you don't want to hear that cancer is back. And this meeting with this doctor was unbelievable. The doctor came in, barely said a few words, pretty much dismissed all my mom's, you know, anxiety, dismissed her concerns, didn't even really bother checking her or looking at her, said, "You're fine. Stop worrying about it. You don't have cancer. Go home. You're fine." We left there. She was in tears. She didn't know what to do. So we decided that we would take her back to Canada to her doc that she had, and he examined her, and sure enough, the cancer had come back. So she knew, and that it was that moment there, that just that uncaring, you know, that we experienced there from that doctor was just something said. I decided at that point that I want to go into the health field, and I want to make sure that no patient ever has to go through that. You know, to be told that you're fine or dismissed. You know, if you're there because you have a concern, it's because you have a concern, and let's address it, you know. But from a very young time, just that concern, and I wanted to be there, and I wanted to make sure I could help people. And so when I got asked to become a visionary, it was perfect timing. It was the right time, because in myself, I was thinking, you know, I want to do something. I want to give back to the community. I want to help people again. And even through college, you know, I was the president of the Alpha Phi Omega Society. It was a service fraternity. You know, that year I was president, we had the most service hours ever, you know, and service has always been a part of our lives. You know, we try to teach our kids about service. In our church, there's a lot of opportunities to perform service. And it's a big pillar, you know, in my life and in our life. When I was younger, when I was 16, when I got my license, I would drive the senior citizens. I would pick them up from home that were around the church and bring them to church and then take them back home, you know, because I just really wanted to make sure that I could be a part of the community and make sure that I was helpful in that community.
Wow. what a phenomenal, phenomenal purpose, you know, and certainly my condolences to your mom, or to you and your family, for your mom. You know, being a cancer survivor myself, certainly, you know, I understand that doctors provide like 30 minutes to tell you something that is really life altering and changing. And it just seems like it's almost unethical, you know, to a certain extent. So I can truly relate with, you know, what you and your family and your mom felt at the time, where there is a major concern and certainly someone basically trying to just kind of shoo you off. And, you know, that to me is just, like I said, it's just not fair, you know? Mm-hmm. And, when you're dealt a bad hand, typically, you know, already it's always in our intuition that we know something's wrong. And then, you know, you're looking for that validation or reassurance, or even just a sense of comfort that it's nothing, but at least go through the process, you know what I mean? And kind of, you know, put our anxiety and mental anguish at ease, you know, and a lot of times that doesn't happen in the medical community. So, you know, my hat's off to you and how this really struck a chord with you. It lit a fire underneath you. It motivated you to go into the medical field. And, you know, I'd have to say that, you know, the similarities between your driving purpose and my driving purpose are almost parallel, because I saw it from a different perspective, being a cancer patient and looking at it and saying, well, why isn't this here? You know, thinking logically, saying, you know, these things should be in place. You know, why can't patients, you know, really ask doctors questions? Why can't they really advocate for themselves? Why does the doctor always have to say that this is the standard of care? It's kind of a one size fit all. Well, that never works for everybody, you know? Right. And so by the time my wife and I got out of our pity party and realized that it was time for us to get ourselves educated, we became that reckoning force. And that's what we had to do, because I would have to say, you know, today, if that wasn't the case, who knows where I would be in my recovery, you know, and, you know, just through family, friends, and people that I know across the globe. I mean, there was just an outcry for support, you know? And so I can truly, truly, you know, empathize with what you and your family went through at the time that, you know, this alleged doctor didn't do his or her job. Yeah. Yeah. So, Al, as we move on and we talk a little bit about, you know, should I say, what's going on in the LLS community, you know, as I'd mentioned before, some of the stats, you know, with regards to what we're doing here in South Central Texas, I also like to say that, you know, the South Central Texas region as a whole has about 15 million people. And based on, you know, what transpired last year in the stats, we were ranked number 2 in the nation for the amount of grant dollars that was pumped in to Texas, well over $30 million. And so for all of our Texonians that are out there, for all our San Antonians that are out there, you know, let's really pay attention to what's going on in our society and in our environment, because we're sitting right at the very top as it relates to blood cancer. And one of the other stats I'd like to share before I ask you the next question is, in accordance with the Leukemia Society, estimated 176,200 people in the United States were diagnosed with leukemia, lymphoma, or multiple myeloma. And of course, the stats are not as updated as I like for them to be, but that was in 2020. I mean, let's think about it, folks. If you go through natural attrition and growth, you know, even if we look at 3.5% or in most cases, maybe 5% now, 6%, you know, that number is definitely well above 200, 250,000 people that are being diagnosed with the blood cancer. So this is real. This is very, very real. And you know, we're trying to do everything we can to make people aware, you know, of the importance of understanding, you know, the things that you should be mindful of, you know, routine health checks and blood work and all the things that you need to do to make sure you can protect yourself. So as we have alluded to earlier about being a visionary and basically, you know, making a difference in the community. Can you help us understand, you know, some of the things that you're seeing that people are faced with and challenged with as they're coming in to get medical type of services?
You know, it's getting harder and harder for patients to get the care that they need, you know, because of the difficulties in obtaining insurance, right? You know, if you're lucky enough that you have a job that offers a health plan or health insurance, and you can afford it, then that's just the bottom step, you know, and then having to pay, you know, towards a deductible. And now what I've seen over the last few years that insurance companies are going to these large deductibles before they pay for anything up front. And you're talking about $4,000 to $8,000 to $10,000 deductibles before anything will be paid from them. And so you already have somebody who's, you know, barely scraping by, and now they need medical care, but now they have to come up with this, you know, and God forbid that they have something serious happen. Now they have to fork over a lot of money before they can even be seen or get the care that they need. And what we see with that, what the problem with that is that people will start to shy away. They say, I'm okay, I don't need to go to the doctor. And they tend to stay away from the doctors because they don't want to spend the money because they don't have it. And so this is where I feel like we lose a lot on the preventative care or things that we could have caught earlier. Although, you know, a lot of the preventative care is covered to some degree, but, you know, patients have this fear of coming in and being seen because they don't know what's going to happen. They can't afford the care. And so that's one of the biggest hurdles I see today, you know, or we see the patients, we diagnose them, we know what they need. You know, we've looked at their imaging, we've looked at their blood work, and now we have a diagnosis and we know, okay, this is what we need to do to get you better. And we put in for authorization and they get denied.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So the care that they need, and we've looked at it. Now you're at, you know, we're specialists, so we know what they need. And now there's somebody who's in a room somewhere in an insurance office looking at this and saying, oh, no, they don't need that.
Right. Right. Yeah. We could talk a lot about the horror stories of dealing with that. Particularly as you talk about the costs, I mean, the average cost for treatment for just about any type of blood cancer is widely spread. But based on the stage of the cancer, specifically the treatment plans, you know, just the cost of chemotherapy, you know, grossly exceeds $200,000 annually. You know, the cost of a stem cell transplant exceeds $800,000. And then all of the post maintenance care that goes on when you're paying for pills that are $1,800 or $700 per pill, you know, do the math. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. And, you know, it's really, really difficult even, you know, I'm sure from your standpoint, even from a statistician standpoint, to kind of gauge how many people go untreated. I mean, you know, based on the numbers that I see in some of the journals of oncology practice back in 2018, they said basically, one third of the cancer patients dealing with financial hardship and everything else, they just go untreated. And that was back in 2018. I just think that number is a lot higher now because the cost of things are just so exorbitant and that no one can afford it, like you said, without some type of insurance, which even that in itself is expensive.
Yeah. Or it's that access to care, right? Like
right.
Lower socioeconomic.
Mm-hmm.
They may not get the same treatment plans.
Correct.
As someone who has a higher, you know, insurance plan or some a better insurance plan or even has insurance, right? If you're talking about an uninsured person who now has a diagnosis of cancer, you have to kind of wonder what kind of care are they going to receive? What kind of treatment options are going to be available to them? And you're right. It's very sad to think about that.
Yeah.
That we have this sort of discrepancy today in this world.
That's true. That's true. And certainly there's a lot that can be done. And I think LLS is a great organization that has the capability of being able to really start to kind of turn the needle, you know, change the narrative on a lot of this. And, you know, based on the four pillar approach that they have and everything that they're doing to influence, you know, acceleration in treatment care and education and support and advocation and legislation, you know, they're on the right track. But as you know, this is kind of like a Kilimanjaro type of mountain that we have to overcome. And, you know, it's not just, you know, the patients and the pharmaceutical companies. It's everyone that's got to figure out how they can ground themselves and really unite it in a way that, you know, it allows for people to be healthy, you know, because that's all people want is to be healthy. I mean, they want to live as long and as prosperous as possible. And we should never be faced with the fact to where you can't get medical care. I mean, it doesn't matter what your social economical status is. I mean, if you're sick, you know, you should be in a position to where you can get assistance. And to me, you know, from a standpoint of I've lived in a lot of different places all over the world. I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, the pros and the cons, as they say, you know, with subsidized insurance, you know, headed up by the government and then non-subsidy and commercialized. I mean, you know, it's all got this plethora of things. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, when you look at various other societies outside of the U.S. and how well they live and how healthy they look and other various things, you know, it tends to bring a question up in my mind as to why, you know, like, what are we doing not only socially, but also in our ecosystem that's causing us to be this way, you know? And like you already know, I mean, from my standpoint, it was life-changing for me, you know, when I got diagnosed. I basically said, if it's not something that I can pronounce or I know what's in it or so forth and so on, it's out. I mean, you know, you just have to kind of, if you want to live after you've been diagnosed with disease and going through everything that you go through, you've got to basically change the narrative. You got to really change the narrative in order to survive and protect yourself and be able to move forward, because the resiliency and the persistence and all the things that you have to have, the mental fortitude, it is draining. It is literally draining, you know.
And it comes at you at all angles and all aspects.
Right.
And you know, you, and before your diagnosis, I mean, you were a generally healthy individual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you weren't partaking in crazy things or habits. And that's what, you know, with blood cancer and why it's non-discriminatory.
That's right.
It doesn't matter. Young, old, baby, adult, senior, mm-hmm. middle-aged, man, woman, it doesn't matter. Race, it doesn't matter. And that's the thing about blood cancers is what makes it so tricky. You know, it's nothing that, oh, I you know, I've been smoking my whole life, so, you know, now I have lung cancer. Okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. here you are going about your business, living your life, and thinking you're living a pretty healthy life, and then all of a sudden you get this diagnosis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, the past 2 years, as I would say, you know, I know the good Lord above has put me in this position for a reason, but certainly, I always say I don't wish this upon my enemy. I mean, it's it gives it the big HELL when you go through it, man. So Al, I mean, we've kind of talked a little bit about Visionary of the Year. We've talked a little bit about your purpose and your why. We've kind of helped people understand a little bit and the significance of elevating, you know, and bringing forth the awareness of what we're trying to do. And one of the things I just like to say is that the Visionary of the Year campaign is actually ongoing. You know, for the folks here in San Antonio that are listening to this, the campaign started on March 30th and it will complete on June 9th, which actually is not that far away, you know, for those folks that are out there listening to this. And I believe with the campaign this year, if I'm not mistaken, we have 12 candidates participating in this year's campaign. Four of the candidates are blood cancer survivors themselves, and two of the candidates have blood cancer survivors in their immediate family. And I think this year's goal is to raise approximately $1.2 million here in the San Antonio area. And I think if you do the math on that, people, when I said, hey, there's 15 million people in South Central Texas LLS region, that's not a lot of money out of your pocket. Yeah. That's not a lot of money out of your pocket. So, Al, is there anything you'd like to leave with our listeners? You know, any final tidbits, words of encouragement, you know, how to reach out and support your campaign? I mean, we're going to give you the floor, Al, going to give you the floor.
You know, the best advice I can give people is you got to put yourself out there. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to come back to a sense of community. We have to come back to a sense of, you know, all these young folks, young people out there, go out and volunteer. You know, it's not until you volunteer, when your soul meets another soul, you make that connection, that human connection. And that's what we need in this world. We need to get back, get that connection. And really, you know, that old saying, right? Walk mm-hmm. a mile in somebody else's shoes, you know, and until you do that, you have no idea what that person's going through, what, where are they coming from? You know, sometimes we're quick to judge and, you know, we don't know what's going on until you know. And so, you know, I think I want everybody, I would love for everybody to be a visionary, you know, and to make their life that vision of what can I do to make this world better? What can I do to leave this world better than I found it, right? Mm-hmm. This campaign's been going great. I have a great team behind me. You know, it's given me a chance to meet people and learn people's stories. And that's how I met you. And it's been a wonderful journey so far. We would appreciate all kind of donations that we can get. I think we're going to put a link down to my page, yeah. Yep, donation absolutely. Page. So please, you know, be generous as you can, because, you know, God forbid, and I would never wish that on anybody, but you never know with this cancer, and God forbid, you want to make sure that support's there for you if you ever needed it. And that education part is there and that support is there for you. So, you know, we're about halfway through our campaign. Mm-hmm. We got a lot going on. We got a lot coming up. You know, we got some events coming up to help raise some money. We got a trivia night coming up. We got a cycle bar event. We got a dog fashion show coming up on June 4th. So, you know, we're just trying to mix it up, have some fun, but at the same time, really educate and bring that awareness to the LLS and to the community of what we do and why it's important. And it's been a great journey so far. And I'm really happy that I chose to do this.
Well, thank you very much there, Al, for those final remarks. Certainly, I'm grateful for your participation along with the other 11 candidates. And, you know, it's been a pleasure and an honor to kind of meet you guys, work alongside of you and kind of help advocate and basically bring my voice and kind of, the real world experience to, you know, what's happening, you know, in the world of a patient and letting people really know that this truly does exist. I mean, it's glaring us in the face. And certainly with the statistics and the numbers that I've read off earlier, you just never know. I mean, it could be your mother, brother, sister, cousin, third cousin, uncle, sister, you know, 9 times out of 10, someone you know is going to be faced with this monster, is what I like to call it. Yeah. And that's exactly what it is. So without further ado, I'm going to like to close out with a quote that I found that I think is really kind of appropriate for the moment. And it says, in every community, there is work to be done. In every nation, there are wounds to be healed. In every heart, there is the power to do it. And that was by Mary Ann Williamson. And so without further ado, I'd like to say thank you very much, Al. It's been a pleasure having
Thank
you.
you, Gary. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. And you keep up that fight.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you very much for the support and the encouragement. And this is Gregory Proctor, your host. And basically, we're going to wrap up becoming a visionary, making a difference to cancel blood cancer. Thank you very much, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Cut to the Chase. Stay connected with us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and LinkedIn at Cut to the Chase. You'll also find even more great content on our website at www.k2tcpodcast.com. Thank you, and catch you on the next episode.